Welcome to the second episode of Desert to Grassland. I'm your host, Sherry Minnelli, and today I'm interviewing Roger Savory. In our last episode, we spoke about the Salton Sea Project that Roger and his team are working on to hopefully win the X Prize for carbon removal. In today's episode, we are talking about heat because it has been sizzling hot all summer. Summer of 2022, not just here in Southern California, where I'm at, but everywhere in the country, and I'm pretty sure other countries as well. And at first, that sounds a bit depressing because it's gotten hotter and hotter and hotter. And I did promise you in the first episode that this podcast would give you hope. Well, there is hope. There is something we can do. I'm back with Roger and an interview that we recorded a few weeks ago about heat and how cooling the area around the Salton Sea, Imperial Valley, Borrego Springs, etc., could have a profound impact on Southern California. So in listening to one of our first conversations together, you were talking about the Salton Sea and the rain shadow. I'm pretty sure you alluded or even said outright that if we could do 150,000 acres, that it would cool down LA and San Diego. Is that right?
Yeah, in a nutshell, yes. When I was in school, they learnt about the water cycle. And the water cycle was the rain comes up from the ocean, goes over to the mountains, rains, falls, flows back down in the rivers, back down to the ocean. But the more I worked on regenerating landscapes and deserts, I realized that there's, in fact, a micro water cycle, whether it's the dew on a leaf that drops to the ground. Well, that didn't come from that rain cloud. Where did the dew come from? Well, that came evaporation out of the soil. So there's this microclimate. And the microclimate, I came to realize, is far more important than the macroclimate. The macroclimate can bring these huge amounts of rainfall in, but it's the microclimate that stores it for thousands of years. What we found was when the microclimate was fixed, we'd have a rainfall event and no water would flow out of the river. None, not a drop. And 3-4 days later, 5 days later, the river would start flowing because that water had all gone into the ground, percolated through, and now finally come out at the low point. And these were things we'd never witnessed before. It used to be if it rained, there was a flash flood in the river, then the water was gone, and then it was back to drought again. So once we started fixing the land and getting it covered with plants and fungi and microorganisms, we realized that, oh, there's something completely different going on in this micro water cycle. So then I started researching and I found that there was data from where they had planted these forests in Zululand in South Africa. And that was the first time that meteorological records showed an increase in precipitation with more vegetation. But it stuck in my brain like, okay, why when there were more trees planted, did the rainfall go up? The research shows you plant 1 million acres of gum trees, the rainfall increases. That's because of the micro water cycle. The Salton Sea area, and I used to live right on the edge of the cliff, many times it was raining on the San Diego side and just over the mountain, it was bone dry. And if you think about it logically, you realize that this extreme heat coming out of the desert, hot air rises. Well, it goes up those cliffs, you know, and it's blowing vertically straight up there. Well, any cloud hitting that extremely hot air has no option but to evaporate and disappear. Now, if you don't believe me, walk into a grocery store in a cold climate like Canada, where they have the hot blowers over the doors. So that as customers walk in and out, they get blown hot air on them. And that cold minus 50 degree Canadian air stays outside and the shop inside stays warm just by having the blower at the door. That's the exact same thing that's happening in the Salton Sea. With this hot air from the desert, hot heat rises, it goes up against those mountains and it's just blowing vertically. And those clouds have no chance but to evaporate because of this extremely intense hot air coming out of the desert side. Now, that hot air, let's say it's 130, 140 degrees because it's baking on bare rocks. Now let's get a layer of 150,000 acres of mulch over those bare rocks. I'm talking 150,000 acres a year. Goes from 130, 140 degree hot air rising off those rocks to what, 80, 90 degree air rising off those same rocks?
So I tried this in my yard last week when it was 90 degrees out. I brought one of those guns you use for your grill, the temperature guns, on the side of my house where it was shady and I had a lot of mint planted, a lot of plants. It was covered. It was in the 80s. I think it was 81. I believe it was only 92 temperature wise in the air. I went into the middle of the yard and I do have a lot of mulch. I couldn't have been more shocked, Roger. It was 141 on top of the mulch. So I moved the mulch, it was like 3 inches, just to see what the ground temperature would be. It was 90. I mean, that's 50 degrees different. And I'm 6 miles from the ocean. So I can't even imagine when it gets like 120 in the Salton Sea area, what those sands actually temperature-wise are. And I also want to make a point. When you're talking about mulch, you could put down mulch, but you could also put down your biological carpeting, which we'll be talking about quite a bit in these podcasts, which is the dung and urine combination about 1 inch thick that creates a nice paste and sunscreen for the sand.
So there we are. Thanks for confirming that. Instead of 80 degree air coming off the desert or 90 degree air coming off the desert, we've probably got 160 degree air knocking those clouds back. That's double the temperature. So when we get enough of the land covered with biological carpet, it will significantly cool those desert sands down. The effect of that on a large enough scale will be significantly cooler air going up those cliffs to intercede with the clouds trying to get over. As soon as that air cools, more clouds will come over. As soon as more clouds come over, there will be more rainfall. When there's more rainfall, more plants will grow on the desert side. What happens when more plants grow on the desert side? The ground will become even cooler. When the ground becomes even cooler, what will happen? Even less hot air will be going to knock the clouds back. When that happens, guess what will happen? Even more clouds will get to come over. And you'll get this whole new rainfall ecosystem going. Oh, and by the way, when there's more plants on the desert side, guess what also happens? Now you create an entirely new micro water cycle. So not only will we change the macro water cycle, we'll also have a vibrant micro water cycle. And then any of the air, currently you have the hot winds blowing out of the desert over the mountain into LA and San Diego and cooking everyone. Well, now instead of 160 degree air blowing over the mountain, it'll be 80 degree air. That's significantly different.
That is stunning. And I think for people who don't know that those two mountain ranges in Southeast California, there's what, 1 million, maybe more than 1 million acres out there?
Oh, well over 1 million, yeah.
So 150,000 is not that much. I'll point you all to another podcast we've done, which is about the carbon cycle and about grasslands versus forests, because I know everybody immediately wants to go out there and plant trees, which for the Salton Sea is really not the best use of resources.
Yeah, it's the wrong solution now. Now, later, once the soils have been healed and the plants are growing, then there'll be legume shrubs that'll grow, and after that will become trees. But historically, that area used to have elm trees and oak trees, and pollen records from the area show there used to be a lot more tree species.
If you were to speak directly to the heat czar, in a nutshell, what would you tell her?
Support our project, ask the USDA to fund us so that we can help Los Angeles.
And maybe encourage all of those people that live in the desert to start covering their land.
If you have to make a decision and you live in a desert, whether you're going to surround your house with rocks or with trees and plants, go with trees and plants, go with life.
And you'll also reduce the heat in your own house. You get that horrible effect. It cracks me up. People put cement all around their house and they wonder why they're boiling in their house. Take out that cement and add trees and plants and ground cover, and it's amazing how much cooler you'll be in your own house.
I've lived in the real deserts of the world, and there are some beautiful acacia type of trees that are huge and shady and send down, these roots 60, 70 meters deep to go and find water. So they don't need irrigation. If you think of the rosewood or the kea tree out of Africa, they've learned to survive in those desert ecosystems. So there are trees that would grow well naturally in the desert. Unfortunately, when we plant them as gardeners, we put a drip irrigation, we teach them to keep their roots shallow. But, naturally, like a kea tree, when it's at the 2-cotyledon stage, it already has a 10-meter deep root in the wild.
Just out of curiosity, what deserts in the world have you actually lived in?
I've lived in the Namib, I've lived in the Kalahari, I've lived in the Karoo, I've lived in the American Southwest, in the Chihuahua, Australian Outback. I've lived in quite a few of them.
Is there a desert that's worse than the Salton Sea that you've seen?
Larger, yes. I mean, the desert in Arabia, that's the whole continent that's been taken over.
Are there any other deserts that you've lived in that only get 2 to 3 inches a year of rain?
Kalahari and the Namib can have very low rainfall. Kalahari, 4 inches is a good, 4 to 6 inches is a good rainfall. But no, the Salton Sea with its 2 to 3 is one of the worst.
And then you add the pollution to make it one of the world's worst deserts.
And the agricultural pollution, the mining pollution, the just the fact that the Salton Sea itself is evaporating and leaving all the salts on the soil surface. It's kind of the perfect storm of how can humans do things as badly as possible because they don't understand desert ecosystems. Humans have turned 2/3 of the planet into a desert, and we've used the exact same technique for the last 150,000 years to turn 2/3 of our planet into a desert. It's the way we make decisions that's at fault, and we didn't understand what we couldn't see, and we couldn't see the trillions of microorganisms in the soil. So because we couldn't see them, we didn't value them. Because we didn't value them, we didn't learn to ask, well, what do they require for their life cycles? It was slash, burn, plow, move on. Slash, burn, plow, move on. If it was a forest and if it was a grassland, it was kill all the grazing animals, build massive traps, run them off cliffs, build rock wall traps, kill them by the millions. Animals gone, grasslands died, food source dried up. Civilizations collapsed. We invented agriculture then in desperation to feed ourselves because our populations had grown up while we were utilizing these grazing animals. When the grazing animals were gone, then we had to invent agriculture to feed ourselves. And agriculture just took us to the next step of killing the soil organisms. And once the soil was dead, then we had to have warfare, go and conquer someone else who hadn't done that to their land yet. We've been doing this for literally 150,000 years.
And we've been salting the soil and not realizing that we were salting the soil. It's not about taking a whole mess of salt and pouring it on soil. It's we are letting all this evaporation happen. We think drip irrigation is so great, and it could be, except that we don't bother covering our land and protecting it with mulch.
Yeah, that's part of what I've done is studied the history of the whole Middle East, the whole Sahara, all the deserts of the world. And sadly, it's the same human story every time. I mean, NASA has some fantastic images from the Sahara showing that there was a village every, I think, 20 miles or 20 kilometers in a complete spiderweb pattern across the entire Sahara. There were millions of humans living there.
I want to bring this back to hope because the whole reason we're doing this is that there is hope and there is a solution. And that's what's so exciting about this. I mean, heck, we could get rid of one of those huge, nasty feedlots that have 600,000 cattle. If we had those 600,000 cattle, in 1 year, we would have that 150,000 acres done in the Salton Sea, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, we've got the resources.
We've got the resources. We just need to repurpose them and understand why we're repurposing them. Test the decision. And I'm the first one that if I can't prove what I've proved in Africa, Australia, America, if I can't prove it again in the Salton Sea, I'll be the first one to throw up my hands and say, sorry, I failed. But if you give me the resources to put a biological carpet on the ground in the desert of a large enough scale that it doesn't evaporate and dry from the edges, and then we're patient and wait for the first rainfall season, you'll see the results.
And what is the least amount of rainfall per year that you've done this on before?
So the least I did it on was 7. But I mean, we had water running off. I really know we can do this on 2 to 3 inches.
Well, thank you, Roger. This has been a great podcast. It's been so enlightening. I've been studying this for a long time, and I keep learning something every time I talk to you. I think that other people are going to be really excited to hear that there's hope. I hope that the heat czar hears this and realizes that there's some really good solutions out here.
Thanks for joining us for this episode. And if you'd like more information, go to fixdesert.com.